for here is to try to look at some type of a formula that in the long term we'll be able to do what we want it to do. And you know, I've been involved with local government aid for as a public official now for 22 years, 13 years as a city council member and a mayor, and 9 years now as a legislator. And in my view, I've always thought it has been the great equalizer, and it helps keep property taxes down and funds things. But what I think about that doesn't necessarily really matter. It's kind of, as people have looked at the program, it's meant a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And so a few of the things in before the introductions here and before Ms. Dalton, Mr. Hines goes over the history and lots of good data on local government aid, I think what's important is probably for this group to look at this a little bit more in a broader scope. I think one of the first things we really need to do before we even contemplate looking at a formula is, what are the goals? What is the purpose of LGA? What is the purpose? And I think as we go around the state, and you have areas that don't get local government aid, and they have legitimate concerns, and those who get a lot of local government aid also have a lot of concerns about the program and so forth. But I think what would be important to help bring people together is come up with what are the goals of local government aid. And I do hope that this committee looks at that first, maybe before we even really start looking at what type of a formula that we would have. And second, I think the group needs to look at, how can we make sure that local government aid is viable, politically viable, and stable into the future? And I think that's going to say a lot about the formula that we come up with. You know, there's benefits in having a real complex system, because you maybe get a fair system, maybe. But there's also some real benefits in having a formula that people can understand politically. And so I think we need to balance the realities of politics. And no other members on this group may agree with me on this, but we have to somehow balance what we have politically with the formula we have. And then the last kind of point that I would make and kind of maybe urge members to look at as we go forward with this is, more and more the push is there as we spend billions and billions of dollars, whether or not it's on education or health care or property tax aids and credits, is where is the accountability? What are we getting back for those dollars? And I think if we are going to kind of get ahead of the curve, I think that's another component of this debate that we need to look at is, for LGA dollars, what, and I think every mayor that probably receives LGA could tell you the benefits, but I don't know if that's getting out there, we really know. But what are we, what can we measure, what would we really be able to show for accountability for the dollars we're getting? So with that, I look forward to this study group and look forward to putting something together that is going to benefit actually ultimately the entire state, because a stronger wherever you are in Minnesota means a stronger state overall. So with that, I will turn it over to Co-Chair Skoy for some comments, and then we'll open it up for introductions.
Well, thank you, Paul, and I'm Rod Skoy, co-chair of this study group, and Paul and I are looking forward to the work that we're going to have to do as we have a pretty broad range of areas of local government aid that we can look at and work through. I do agree with Paul on the idea that we should probably look at some of the rationales for the goals of the aid program as we go forward, before we really start trying to understand whether this need-based formula is truly need-based, or if it's doing what we want it to do. And for myself, when we think about the goals, I also think we should try to see if the LGA program that we have had has had some accomplishments. Has the local government aid that we've had done economic vitality in some areas of the state that wouldn't have had it? Has the local government aid worked in conjunction with the equalization program of school aid to improve our state? And so when we're talking about the goals, I think we should look back, and we're going to do some of that today, about what LGA has been, and is it been a good program in the history for our state, and is it one that people of Minnesota are going to think is important to continue? Are there then changes that need to be made to make it better? And that's what we're all here to do. Looking forward to working with you all. I see by the statute that we're going to be done by December 15th, so we have a long time. Doesn't mean, yes, of next year, a whole year from now. So I guess for myself, I'm certainly going to be interested in hearing from each of you where your areas of interest are and what you think we should be targeting on specifically, and what direction you think we should take also. But for myself, I think we need to look back a little bit. We're going to do some of that today. Then we'll start to look forward and see where we can go, and hopefully always with the idea that we're going to be making Minnesota more vital and better place to live. So thank you all for your time.
Thank you very much, Senator Skoy. At this time, we'll have introductions, and we'll start over here to the right. But if you would just provide, you know, your name and where you represent or where you come from, a little bit of background that you have in this area. And if you want to make comments now, you can. I will assure you that after the presentations, there will be plenty of time for comments. We'll leave that time open. So if you want to wait, if you've got some thoughts now, you can either say them now or later. So I'm going to start with a colleague on the Property Tax Division, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pat Garofalo. I'm serving in my third term in the Minnesota House. I represent Farmington, Southern Lakeville, and portions of rural Dakota and Goodhue counties. And I'm just impressed because this is the largest group of legislators I've seen this year who are not running for governor. Thanks for staying unless you have an announcement. Thanks for the invitation to participate, and I look forward to offering my perspective on issues.
Thank you very much. Sure.
I'm Representative Diane Moss. I represent Northeast Minneapolis, and I've been on the Property Tax Division for 3 years, and on the School Tax Committee now. This is my first year, and but in full disclosure, I should say, back in the 80s, I actually worked for the League of Minnesota Cities as their chief tax and LGA person and ran the runs, and it's amazing to me how over the time that's intervened, how many things have stayed the same in terms of the concerns about the program and whether it does achieve the goals that were envisioned for it, and you know, how do you define and measure equity, how do you measure what we should be stepping up to and for whom, and should everyone be under the tent or only certain cities, and I look forward to learning more and working with all of you to come up with a solution that will hopefully offer greater stability than it has offered over the last couple of decades.
Thank you.
I am Betsy Hodges. I am a Minneapolis City Council member, also chair of our Intergovernmental Relations Committee, and I also serve on our Ways and Means Budget Committee, which means a significant percentage of my life is spent thinking about local government aid policy.
I'm Joel Young. I'm a city clerk in Chatfield, a small town in southeastern Minnesota. I've been there about 19 years. I also serve as the president of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and to work with you folks. And I really appreciate your comments, Mr. Chairman, about the goals and the purpose, you know, to get an understanding of what we might get back out of the money that gets spent, which we have to have clarity of purpose. So that's natural. It's my hope, too, that we look even broader as we go forward, that we look at the local government aid program in the context of really all the ways that we distribute wealth between the units of government in Minnesota. Transportation aids, fiscal disparity aids, TAC night aids, PFA, deeds, all these different ways that money goes from one unit of government to another results in the same thing, you know, and that's serving the people of Minnesota. But if we look at these things separately, I don't know if we'll get any farther than formulas that get tweaked from time to time. If we look at them a little bit more holistically, we might get somewhere that it's more stable and politically viable over a long time. Thank you.
I'm Rachel Wasser with the League of Minnesota Cities. I've been there for about 7 years, and to echo Councilmember Hodges' comments, a lot of that time has been spent working on LDO. So I'm glad to be here and looking forward to learning from all of you and hopefully contributing.
Thank you very much.
I'm Ann Norris, Crystal City Manager. Crystal is a suburb of Minneapolis, Northwest Hennepin County, and Crystal, like a lot of other fully developed aging communities, is quite reliant on local government aid. So I'm here because we have a vested interest in seeing the stability and viability and predictability of local government aid into the future.
Thank you very much. Senator?
Linda Scheid. I live in Brooklyn Park, represent half of Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center. They are poster children for why we need reform of LGA. And what can I say? Well, I was in the House of Representatives back when LGA was about 4 or 5 years old. And I remember those LGA discussions. I was on the tax committee as a freshman back then. And give you an idea of how long I've been around. I've served 17 years on a tax committee in one body or the other, but I was gone for 6 years, and I also just spent the last, until last year, wasn't on the tax committee again for 6 years, I think. So that's a long time. Yeah, that's a math problem. You can see if you can figure that out, because I'm not sure I can, but I'm glad to be on this, I think. I think it's going to be a lot of work, and it'll be a lot of interesting discussion, and hope that I can contribute something. So thanks.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, my name is Steve Peterson. I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which is 80 cities around the state in Greater Minnesota, representing their mayors and their councils. I think that the first thing you said of finding a goal is very important. I think that we have to determine what this program is for. Is it strictly just property tax relief, where we can just send out points checks to cities and say, buy it on your property tax? Are we looking at equalizing the tax basis, in which case then we have to put that into order? Or are we also looking at meeting cities' needs that have overburden, either because they are isolated or because they have surrounded by a lot of townships, or they're surrounded by suburbs that maybe use their communities that they don't use, or they're a suburb that has a lot of infrastructure inside of it? And that's what we have to determine first. And once we determine where we want to go with this program, is it to solve all those needs or part of those needs, then we have to get to the formula. And I hope that we can get a formula that everyone at this table can get together and think is not only rational in how cities spend their money, but also intuitive, so it's more easily explained to people. And that's what I hope we get done here.
Thank you.
I'm Bruce Algren. I'm the mayor of Cloquet, one of the most beautiful cities in northern Minnesota. And you're welcome up there anytime you want to come through and say hi. I was actually on the school board in Cloquet for 12 years, and this is my 11th year as mayor. I was retired as court administrator for Carlton County 2.5 years ago, which I served in that capacity for 30 years. I've been in this room sitting in those chairs and many times in those chairs testifying, but this is the first time at this table. But I think one of the things with that I'm interested in this committee, besides the local government aid and what we can do with it, is the frustration that we have over it also. It's a good program. I've had a lot of opinions. My opinions have changed as I read more about local government aid and what it does and what it doesn't do. So I'm looking forward to serving on the committee, and hopefully I can give some advice and take a lot of stuff back.
Thank you all. At this time, I think we're going to move to the next part of the agenda, and we have Ms. Dalton and Mr. Hines from House Research who will go over this. And I would encourage members to, if this is all right, Ms. Dalton and Mr. Hines, if they could ask questions as you proceed with each slide. So why don't we just do that? So if you have a question, just ask it as it comes to you, because we've got the time. I think we've got 26, 27 slides and then some other handouts. But members, feel free to ask questions as they go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the task force. My name is Steve Hines, and I'm with the Health Research Department. And I will be leading off the discussion with a little background of property tax relief programs in general, and then Pat will cover the bulk of the presentation that's directly related to local government aid. And you should all have packets in your copies of the slides in your packets, so you could follow along there or on the screen. They're the same, except there's color on the screen and not on some of the graphs. So the going back, we sort of started it with for this little analysis back at 1971, the time of the Minnesota Miracle, as it's often called, the reform of 1971. And for the purposes of the next few slides, just sort of breaking the property tax relief programs into three categories, aid programs such as local government aid, homestead and agricultural credit aid, HACA, disparity reduction aid, county criminal justice aid, county program aid. There have been a few more over the years as well, but just to kind of refresh people's memory on some of the terms, those are the, when they say aid programs, I'm talking about those programs. Then credit programs, and those are various things that all sound pretty similar, but there's the homestead credit, the agricultural credit, and then there was for a while the education homestead credit. And now we have the market value homestead credit and the market value agricultural credit. Basically, the credit programs are one where the focus of the program is more on the tax, the relief, or the effect on an individual taxpayer's statement, as opposed to an aid, which is more of a payment to the local government to hold property taxes down. And then the third category is direct payments to taxpayers. These ones have been fairly constant over the years. The property tax refund, both homeowners and renters, and then the much smaller targeting program for homeowners as well. The first graph then shows the spending. And just these are just looking at five-year snapshots over this period of time. The spending on property tax relief programs since 1975, and this is in real terms, so this is in $2009 dollars. And you can see that the there was a period of fairly rapid growth in the late 70s as both the LGA and the Homestead Credit really provided much of the fueled much of the growth in the overall spending on property tax relief programs. The next period that kind of stands out is then from 85 to 95, there's a drop in real spending on property tax relief. And in some ways, that's a little misleading, and the purpose of this exercise isn't necessarily a real fair comparison of what the state has done. But in those times, some of what was done was some property tax money was moved into more taking over more functions. So there was in that period of time, and primarily that's driven by a major reform that took place in 1988 and 89. There was a when we sort of into that reform, and then coming out of it, we moved some county money into specific programs, took over human service expenditures and court costs, and moved some property tax relief money into school aid more directly, and that's not being picked up in this graph. So it's as I said, it's not necessarily a fair comparison to assume the state was spending less on. This is more the property tax, the money kind of controlled by the tax committee might be a better way to look at the overall amount. From 95 to 2000, you see a fairly significant uptick, and that is when a new program came in called the Education Homestead Credit. And it was all directed towards school districts. It was really, a lot of it was done to allow some changes, some reforms to the way that class rates were, and the Education Homestead Credit was kind of a mechanism to hold things relatively constant while we did that.
The period from 2000 to 2005 shows a big drop-off, and again, this is somewhat misleading because, as I think most of you are aware, this getting into more recent history, that's primarily picking up the major change in the 01 reform, where the state basically took over the whole general ed formula and dropped off a lot of the money that had been more on the property tax relief side over into being just pure straight education spending. And then the last little increment there from 2005 to 2010 shows just a slight uptick, and the 2010 figures in all of my little charts here are going to be before the unallotment, so it's just trying to show kind of what the legislatively directed spending would be as opposed to the actual spending. And we could do them again with that in mind, but we weren't sure exactly what we should try to show and thought that might be a better thing to show you at this time for your consideration. The next graph then is kind of the same dollars, but instead of showing it as real spending, now it's showing it as a percentage of the state's general fund. And what I found kind of interesting in going through this exercise was to realize that in the early 80s there, the property tax relief programs per se were almost a quarter of the general fund, which, you know, I don't know if I realized quite how high it had gotten to back in that era when the homestead credit again was growing quite significantly, and LGA was growing in that period as well. Then from 85 to 95, it shows a precipitous drop, and again we talked about some of the restructuring that had gone on and some of the money moved into straight human service programs and education programs. Although, if you compare to the previous chart, the fall off looks a lot more larger in this chart as a percentage of the general fund. And that what I found out as I was doing this project is that's because the general fund really was growing quite significantly over that time frame, and the property tax spending did not sort of match that spending in the general fund. So it wasn't so much that the property tax spending went down as much as the general fund got bigger, and that added general fund money did not go into property tax relief, direct property tax relief programs.
Mr. To that point, do you have the 85 general fund and the 2005 general fund just rough?
The actual amount?
Yes,
I have those figures here. The 2000 to the 85, did you ask?
Yeah, well, 85 or 80, it's
85, the general fund was about $4.7
billion. In 2005...
What city was that for?
this is then the FY86, just so the calendar year is kind of what I've done the exercise in, but the calendar 85 generally matches up with the FY86. And then for 2005, the general fund is at just under $15 billion, $14.97.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sort of along those lines, the general fund between 85 and 90 increased by about 50%, and then another 24% from 90 to 95. So very large periods of growth in the size of the general fund back then. The next slide now is looking at these three different kinds of aid programs in that time frame: the direct payments to taxpayers, the credits, and the aid. And if you look at the beginning of the time frame there, you'll see that the credit programs, which again this is primarily the homestead credit, was the largest of the three. LGA was in existence and it was about a third and declined a little bit in that 10-year period, relatively, that is. And the credit is, as those of us who were around then know, that credit just kept growing in that period of time. And the direct payments stayed relatively the same. The direct payments back in those days tended to fluctuate quite a bit from one year to the next, I noticed, in doing this exercise. Then in 1990, you'll see that for those 2 years I'm showing here, there are no credit programs because the reform of 88-89 was to basically get rid of the homestead credit as it was then conceived and move it all into an aid-based program under the premise that the Homestead Credit Program was overly stimulative of spending, and that was the rationale for converting it to an aid program. Then in 1995 to 2000, the credit program starts to come back into being, although again, this is strictly the education homestead credit, no longer a general, wasn't trying to achieve the same benefit goals as it was in the 70s and 80s. And then finally, after the 2000 reform, you'll see that the credit programs are back in existence, the market value credit and then agriculture and homestead credit. The aid programs have been fairly constant in this 05 and 10. The credit program actually gets smaller because, as many of you are aware, the current credit program goes down as values go up. But the thing I think that is interesting is now from 2000 to 2010, you'll see that the direct payment, the property tax refund, has grown quite significantly as a share of the type of aid in that time frame. And again, the 2010 numbers are before unallotment or projected unallotment. Then the next slide now is trying to look at the which jurisdictions actually received the property tax tax relief money. So the credit program actually do go end up being paid to jurisdictions, and I guess the sort of observations I would make there are all along, the city's share has always been the largest of the shares going to the various jurisdictions. The county share has been relatively constant over, this is again done in constant dollars, $2009, so remember that that's not the nominal amount, that's relative to 2009 inflation. And the counties have been relatively constant. The school district, which is the green on the overhead, is the one that fluctuates the most. Typically after a restructuring, the school share goes down, as this restructuring often has been to move money out of the more into direct school aid spending and not into property tax relief, and then tends to creep up over time. At least that's what happens in the past. And then the direct payments again show that sort of steadily increasing pattern since 2000. Now just the last.
Mr. Hines, we got questions from.
Thank you.
Representative Rockwell.
Just a quick question. Regarding the inflation factor that you use, is that the CPI inflation factor that's assumed? What do you use?
Good question, Representative Rockwell. I should have mentioned that. I'm using the implicit price deflator for government spending.
Thank you.
And then the last observation I was just making on this slide was that the school share now is again down to where it's very small. Because of the restructuring now, most of the direct most property tax releases that go through the tax committee is no longer being directed at school districts. And this was mostly just kind of trying to set a little bit of the stage for the LGA discussion, but that's all that I was going to do on that. I take more questions, but now Pat will go into the LGA specific part of the presentation.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dalton.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. I'm Pat Dalton from House Research. I've been doing LGA since 1987, but the program has existed since 1971. Fortunately, Steve has been around for 10 years longer than I have, so some of the information, particularly about the early years, actually comes from some writings that Steve did when he covered the program prior to my being hired. So if you get questions particularly about details in 71 through, the early 80s, he's going to be the one who's going to have to answer. LGA was, as Steve said, part of the Minnesota Miracle in 1971. The first payments were in 1972. The main purpose of LGA was to replaced a number of significant smaller tax sharing programs with one significant state program. It was really a consolidation issue. And it was really still seen as a tax sharing program to a large extent. In addition to tax sharing, the primary goals were provide property tax relief and to ensure sufficient revenues for local government needs. One of the trade-offs of the Minnesota Miracle, which we've started pointing out a little bit more in recent years as we've had more and more movements to a demand for local sales taxes, is as part of the Minnesota Miracle, when they significantly increased the local government aid, the property tax relief given directly as general aid to local governments, the trade-off was that the law also prohibited new local sales and income taxes. And it was not written into the sales tax law, it was written into the local government aid law.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you. To that point, what year was the prohibition on personal property tax and the state sales tax enacted in relation to this? I mean, is that was 5 years earlier than this or 4 years earlier? Because there was that action was going on kind of at the same time these legislators were ending up with this program, weren't they?
Mr. Hunter, I believe that the sales tax started in 67.
Yeah.
Which would be kind of the time frame you're thinking of. And I can't remember about the personal property tax, but that
was in the same time frame, wasn't it, Mr. Hines?
I'm getting some other veterans are saying that was about the same time.
Other veterans.
The only local sales tax that really actually existed when the prohibition was enacted was the loose local sales tax.
Okay. And Mr. Hines or Ms. Dalton, how many, do you have any thought on or information on this personal property tax that these local jurisdictions levied that they gave up with when the sales tax came into being and the dollars, and was there some thought with legislators that this was going to be replacement for that, or was there any discussions about that? Am I not thinking of this right? Because in 67 I was in...
Seventh
grade, I guess.
In 67, I was 8 years old.
Okay.
Senator Scoy, I just really don't know the answer to that question. If that was part of that discussion or not, you know, Ms. Baker, Ms. Sellner might, Ms. Goff might have a. They're discussing it now, but.
Senator Scoy, one thing I would point out is that there used to be a program called the Tax Machinery Aid, which to some extent was a replacement for some of the personal property taxes and went to jurisdictions that had significant personal property taxes and then lost it with the prohibition against personal property taxes.
Okay, thank you.
And that program is now gone.
That's gone.
Well, Ms. Dalton, are you going to touch base a little bit about, I mean, you say they're replaced with a number of smaller tax-sharing programs. Was that part of the time when they lost this attached machinery aid?
Senator, the attached machinery aid, my recollection on this is that we kind of whittled it down over the course of the 70s and even into the 80s. To where we only were giving it to jurisdictions where it was got a significant amount of money from it. So as long as you weren't, if there wasn't a big part of your tax base or any more, we kind of tended to cut it out. So by the end, it was only going to a few places. But I think it lasted all the way up, the last remnants of it went all the way up to around 2000 when we did the county overhaul. There was still, I think, some, just maybe counties only were getting some. So it was a pretty small program by the end.
Okay. Thank you.
As I said, he needs to answer some of those early questions. The original LGA structure. LGA was not originally envisioned as a city program. It was a aid that went to all forms of local government except schools. Because it was primarily seen as a replacement to tax sharing, the first distribution was to the county, based strictly on population. So every county was getting getting a per capita amount. The equalization that was occurring in the original structure really was happening within the counties as opposed to between the counties. So the aid was distributed within counties based on fiscal need, and the definition of fiscal need at that time was essentially your share of the property tax levy. One of the features of the original LDA structure, which carried over for a very, very long time, was a guarantee that each local government would receive at least what it had received under the old tax sharing, albeit individual smaller tax sharing systems. This was the start of the LDA grandfather, which we all know and love, or don't love, or at least talk about a lot. This slide actually shows you the distribution of LDA by local government type. And although I said that it was not originally envisioned as a city aid program, even from the beginning, almost all increases went to cities. Very early on, the payments to counties, townships, and special taxing districts were pretty much frozen at the early level. And then there was a couple of adjustments by counties got an extra dollar per capita in the 80s. So most of the dollars in the 70s and early 80s actually went to cities. In 1984, there was a big increase in moving the money into cities. By that time, all payments to special taxing districts, and if you look on, you see one really dark little black line up at the top of 72. That was all that ever went to special taxing districts. They got $600,000 originally, and it went away fairly quickly. In 1984, the county payments were actually cut by 40%, and town payments were cut by 60%. And these were already flat payments. And towns also were now required to have a minimal mill rate in order to even qualify for a town LDA payment. So just to give you the actual years, payments to special taxing districts were eliminated in 1979. Payments to counties were eliminated in 1991, although prior to 1991, they were fairly small. Now, I do want to point out that it wasn't that we quit giving aid to local to counties. Counties began giving aid under different programs. They got a lot of money under the HACCP program. And they began getting programmatic aid, or kind of programmatic aid. It was based on some need factors, county criminal justice aid and family preservation aid. You know, started in 1993 and 95. Although they were based on programmatic factors, there was no actual statutory requirement that they spent them on those programs. So they were still general purpose aids, and they were coming through the property tax system instead of through the tax committee instead of through the committees that had jurisdiction in those areas. And then, as the slide notes, county criminal justice aid, family preservation aid, and county sheriff HACCP were all rolled into the new county program in 2004. So there is a separate $200 million county program. No. $200 million? $200 million. Steve, that's the county program. Payments to towns were eliminated in 2002, and they were very minimal even before 2002. So county, so city LDA funding over time, and this is just the city share of LDA from 72 through 2009. The red little dots are the when we actually made cuts after certification. We certify aid to cities in September of the year prior to which they're going to be paid, and this allows cities to set their budgets with some expectation. As you notice, we made cuts prior to the 90s, but we never made cuts after certification up until 1991. And in 1991, you'll see for the first time, we actually paid less than we certified. 1992 is actually an interesting year. That year is the one and only year we actually paid more LDA to cities than we had certified. And for those who were around during that time, that was because at that time we had the local government trust fund. It was a dedicated fund equal to the revenue raised from the half cent local option sales tax, local option in quotes, plus 1.5 cents of the state sales tax. And there had been some attempt on the part of the legislature to make sure that we matched the programs paid out of that fund to what we anticipated to be in that fund. And in 2002, we didn't do a fair shake up. And there was, I believe, an extra $22 million paid to cities that year. And in 1993, we eliminated the local government trust fund. You notice there's a very large spike in the local government aid payments in 2002, and that is because during the 2001 reform, we eliminated HACA payments, and the cities have been getting about $200 million in city HACA, another general aid program. When that was eliminated, the LGA was increased by $160 million. So essentially $160 million of the $200 million of city HACA payments were rolled into LGA at that point. As you notice, it didn't last very long. In 2003, we had a budget crisis, and cities immediately lost the aid through an aid cut. And then you notice there's been some modest growth, and there is some planned growth for the next couple of years. However, because again of the governor's own allotment, the amount actually paid in 2008 and the amount paid in 2009 is below what had been certified.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dalton, thank you. Do you have a similar graph that shows how much money from sales tax and income tax from cities have come to the state in a similar period of time?
I do not have it with me. I mean, it's something that we can probably make some calculations. Ms. Baker in our office does something called major state aids and taxes, and it looks at where revenues are gathered on a county-by-county basis over time, and so we could probably put something together in terms of where state revenues are coming on a geographic basis.
I mean, the question I would have would be the amount, which I, you know, any information that you have would be great, and also the trend of that amount over time. I assume that it's been going up over time, but I don't know for certain.
Well, I know, but that would answer.
Ms. Dalton, would it be a fair assumption that the cost of eliminating the local sales tax, you know, we've had that bill in the past, I think the cost is $80 million or something, would that be an answer to Councilwoman Hodges? Is that what you're trying to get at, how much money
you're
paying?
I'm not sure. Maybe you can ask your question again.
Councilmember Hodges.
It's a genuine question in and of itself. It does have the answer to which does have implications vis-a-vis the relationship between cities and the state. But part of it is, you know, it's notable that as part of the Minnesota Miracle, cities were prohibited from having local option sales tax or local option income tax, which means part of the agreement cities made that we would send all our sales tax and income taxes to the state. And so the question is, as we're sending all the sales tax and income tax to the state, how much are cities sending to the state? And then the comparison would then be how much have cities been getting back over time in the form of these aid programs?
Ms. Dalton.
Councilman Hodges, I think maybe the question you're trying to ask is how have those revenues grown over time compared to how LGA has grown over time?
How have they grown or shrunk? I mean, LGA right. has grown and shrunk, and I'm imagining at various points in the last 30 or 40 years how much revenue the cities are sending to the state has also grown and shrunk. I'm just interested in seeing what those
okay.
numbers are.
That's actually a somewhat hard question to answer because, for one thing, we don't collect income tax or sales tax numbers very well at below the state level. And we have some estimates for counties, but you know, even when we were working on a county local sales tax option this year in the House, there were some issues about how we were making those estimates of what county sales taxes would raise. But we can certainly get some information for you.
Anything you can, I understand that it's complicated. We've tried to do it at the city of Minneapolis a little bit as well, and I know it's complicated. But anything that you have
mm-hmm.
would be useful to. Thank you.
Senator Scoy.
Ms. Dalton, when the department finishes their BOSS data set report, Will that provide some income information that would be helpful in answering this question, and maybe some sales tax? But there's certainly going to be some income information there that might be helpful in answering this question.
We do have someone, Mr. Ouellette, from the Department of Revenue, who had mentioned earlier that it's getting fairly close to having that all completed. But Mr. Ouellette?
Mr. Chair, members of the working group, the VOS database will have income data for homesteaders only, so it won't be a good broad measure of income by jurisdiction. And we do plan to release some information from the database within the next several weeks. Because this is database on individuals, and because of disclosure issues with income data, we will be aggregating to the regional level somewhat. So we could provide some information on homesteader income, but it's by no means a measure of all the income taxes paid within the jurisdiction. And there's no sales tax information in the VOS database.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Beth. Thank you. Ms. Dalton.
Well, to continue, this next slide actually shows the same data, except it shows it in inflation-adjusted dollars. So it's all in millions of 2009 dollars. And as you can see, it's a much more stable number. One of the things I wanted to point out is the period between 1992 and 2002, and we're going to talk about that in more detail when we talk about the individual LGA formula and how it's changed over time. But this was, I don't know if you want to call it the golden age of LGA, but this was the only period in time where the LGA formula was not changing on every year or every other year. This was the most stable period. This is the 1992 formula. It was in effect until 2002. One of the things that this formula did is it had an automatic inflation factor. The appropriation increased every year between 2.5% and 5%, depending on the implicit price inflator for state and local government. So, as you can see, this is almost a flat line. The reason it's not quite a flat line is because there was a cap on the maximum increase or the minimum increase in the appropriation, and also because the inflation factor used in increasing the appropriation every year was a lagged inflation factor. So it doesn't always match up with every year. And again, just pointing out that the peak in 2002 was due to that elimination of HACA and the roll-in of $160 million of HACA into LGA, and then, as you can see, followed by the cuts due to the budget crisis and then the unallotment. One question that we often get asked is, what is the impact of LGA over time on city budgets? And the one thing I want to first be very clear about is that this is for all cities, and this really masks the variations in individual cities. So this is the percent of the city general fund revenues that are made up of property taxes, other own source revenues, LGA, and other intergovernmental aids over time. Individual cities have much different, their budget makeups are significantly different from the average. For instance, many suburbs get no LGA. So clearly, 10% of their budget is not going to be made up of LGA, and the percentage of their budget made up of other things, particularly property taxes, is going to be much higher. But this at least gives you an idea over time what's going on. LGA, which is the black line on the colored sheet, has generally been about 10 to 15% of general fund budget. It's as high as 50% of some individual city budgets. In 2007, we're kind of at a low watermark in terms of overall city budgets. It's 9.9% of overall city budgets in 2007. The reason we do not sell anything beyond 2007 is we do not have state auditor data for more recent years. hopefully we should have 2008 soon, but it's not available quite yet. In property taxes generally make up 20 to 30% of general fund budgets. In 2007, they are higher than average. It was 33%. So as the LGA percentage has gone down, the property tax percentage has gone up. The yellow bar, I think, is one of the things that's most important. When we talk about LGA, when we talk about city's revenue base, when we're doing aid checks and things like that, we're talking about LGA plus property tax, because that's what we have the most recent data for. It makes up about 40% of city budgets on average. What has been a growing source of city budgets is the other own source revenues. Those are charges and fees, those are special assessments, those are these special taxes like franchise fees, gravel taxes, local sales taxes. And that is a that has been an ongoing growing source of local budgets.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Felton, I seem to recall that part of the 1971 Minnesota miracle was to try and also standardize and limit these other revenue sources. It seems to me that both cities and counties, I don't think it was true of townships, had a variety of other kind of revenue streams that had been authorized by law, and that part of that was it not just giving up local income and sales tax potential, which, as you point out, only Duluth had used on the sales tax end, but it was also a lot of, you know, cigarette sales licenses and, I mean, all kinds of miscellaneous kind of other revenues that I thought got were starting to get kind of wild in terms of the creativity, and I thought that was part of it, and who was to address that other revenue. Do you have any recollection of that?
Ms. Dalton.
Representative Loeffler, I think some of them, the things that you were talking about, like cigarette fees and things like that, those were actually the tax sharing programs that were replaced by this. There have been, I mean, one of the things to remember is counties, cities, townships, they're all creatures of the state. So to a large extent, many of their powers to raise revenues are limited unless the state actually gives them those powers. So it's not like they can just go out and willy-nilly do a whole lot of things. So I'm not really sure that I can think of, you know, some other things that got replaced other than kind of the authority to go out and do local sales taxes or local income taxes. As I said, you know, even though that was prohibited in 71, we know particularly in the 2000s, in the last 10 years, that has been a growing source of local revenues. Both at the county and city level.
Mr. Peterson.
Pat Feldman. Ms. Feldman.
Just call me Pat.
Pat. So if there hasn't been a growth in the ability to charge for services and new things, is it just that cities are charging more and using the property tax less and now using less? Would that be an accurate assumption or no?
Mr. Peterson, I think that's probably an accurate assessment. You know, property taxes and LGA, the growth in that form has often been limited. It was not due to levy limits, you know, which pretty much says the combination of those two sources of revenue can only grow by a certain amount. So when that happens and cities are facing difficulties, yes, they do get creative. They increase their park and rec fees. They start charging for plowing alleys. They start imposing lighting fees. So you are assessed for there being a street light on your city block. So yeah, I mean, that's what's been happening. And people have talked about it anecdotally, and I just think that this slide kind of demonstrates that this has indeed been going on.
Thank you.
So now we get to the nitty-gritty of it, the heart and soul of what have been the LGA formulas. And I've divided the period between 72 and 2002 into five periods. I do not want anyone to think that for most of these periods that meant there was one formula in place for that period. It's just that the formula during that period was somewhat similar. They, as I said, they tweaked them every year or 2 years, between 72 and 92. So, 72-75 was essentially what we described when we were describing what happened in the original 71 legislation. The money was distributed to counties on a per capita basis, and then within counties based on a share of levy. And as you notice, I put down rolling grandfather. This set it out where you couldn't get less than the tax, what you had been getting under the old program. Very quickly, it just became, you can't get less than what you got last year. If you notice, from 72 through 92, you will see rolling grandfather listed as one of the characteristics all the way through. The only time that a city lost money during that period is if we cut the total appropriation to a city, to all cities, if we cut the entire LGA appropriation because we were moving money to, like, school aid from cities. That would be the only time a city would have lost money during that period. Other than that, they were just continually growing up. 76 to 79, the money was still distributed to counties on a per capita basis, but we did our first attempt to include some ability, fiscal capacity measures. Instead of just using levy to distribute the money, we used equalized mill rate, which takes into account not only the city levy, but also the city tax base. So that was our first attempt to really kind of put fiscal capacity into the formula as well as fiscal needs. During the 1980 to 89, we more formally went to changes in LGA is going to be based on fiscal need minus fiscal capacity. Often during this period, the need was based on a three-year average levy. Capacity became very standardized. It was your equalized assessed property value, the adjustments to sales, at your tax base after it was adjusted for the sales ratio. 1989 to 1992 was the first attempt to really move the measure of city need away from city spending decisions, city levy. In 1989, we went to a very ad hoc measure of city need, and it was based on population. Actually, it was based on the log of the population, which was the first time we also got, you know, a higher level mathematical equation into LGA, and I remember having to explain logarithms to people. City location and population growth. The formula, those need factors hadn't been picked because anyone had done any statistical analysis. This was just, you know, something that people were, you know, and Senator Scheid is remembering this era.
Yes, I am.
But it was really in response to the fact that people were getting somewhat upset about the, you know, what was considered to be the stimulative nature of LGA. You know, the more you spent 1 year, or the more you raised in property tax levies in 1 year, the more money you would get in LGA the next year. And so they were trying to eliminate that. What really happened, though, is, you know, everyone realized that there really wasn't a big analytical underpinning to the 1989 formula. And so this was really the start of a period of about 4 or 5 years when the legislature, the governor, the city groups all really started to work at trying to measure, how do you measure city needs? This was the era of the LAD study, which the legislature funded. This was a year, that was like started in 1989, I think that went 89 and 90. The League of Minnesota Cities did their own analysis in 91, 92. I'm looking at Eric Ouellette because he was actually with the league at that time and was one of the, no, you were not? Oh, Gary Carlson worked on it. And then there was also a governor's initiative called CORE Report that was in the early 90s as well and was also trying to come up with a measure of city needs. That led to the new formula that went into effect in 1993. to a large extent was actually based on the analysis that was done by the League of Minnesota Cities, trying to measure needs. The need was based on a regression analysis used to determine four need factors. And in your packet, you have two short subjects called the City LDA Program. And one is updated February 2007, and one is updated January 2009. Look at the one dated 2007. If you go to the back of it, there is a table, and essentially the middle column of that table lays out essentially the formula that was in existence from 1992 to 2002. And as I said, there was two need measures, one for large cities, one for small cities. You can actually see what the formulas were. These were based on separate regression analysis. The large city need measure actually had a reasonable explanatory power. It explained about over 50% of the variation in city spending. The small city needs did not have nearly as much explanatory power. I think it was more in the order of somewhere in between 20 and it explained about 20 to 30% of variation in city spending in the small cities. Small cities are defined as cities under 2,500. That is the vast majority of the cities in the state. Capacity stayed at equalized assessed value. One of the biggest differences is that grandfathered aid was not eliminated, but it was frozen at the 1993 level. So instead of it being a rolling grandfather, once you got money, you got to keep that increase forever. Now you were only guaranteed to get whatever you got in 1993. This meant that all new money was distributed via the formula, and any money above your 1993 amount could be redistributed the following year if a city was no longer as needy relative to other cities. The original formula actually had a mechanism to un-grandfather the grandfather. The original formula in 1992 basically said for every new dollar of LGA appropriation, we would un-grandfather $1 of grandfather days. So this was, as the appropriation went up, the grandfather would have gradually gone down. That lasted all of 1 year in 1994. That was eliminated. the grandfather at the time was $321 million, and there was $9 million distributed via the formula the first year. By 2002, the last year that that formula was in play, there was $360 million of grandfather. $321 million of it was the original grandfather. And there was $227 million being redistributed every year via the formula. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about is how did the grandfather go from $321 million to $360 million? One of the things that did occur during that period, and really about the only thing that was happening during that 10-year period in LGA, was that individual cities would come in and make a case for they had some unique special needs that were not being measured by the formula. And so they would be granted some permanent money that they would get added to their grandfathers. Most of them were in perpetuity. Some of them were for some limited time periods. Coon Rapids got an extra $450,000 for a 10-year period. I believe Osseo also got some limited money for, a specific road project and things like that. The city of Baxter also did. But most of them tended to be permanent. The one major one that occurred during that time was in 2000. There was the development of regional centers. No, 2002 was the 2001. I'm looking at Steve because he's the hand of it. 2001 was the addition of regional center aid. And this was additional money to cities in upstate Minnesota with population, a 2,000 population over 10,000. And that's about I want to say that's about $26 million of the $40 million of grandfathered that was added during that time period. So, as I said, everyone was relatively happy with the 1992 formula, so why did we change? There were several reasons. The 1992 formula was essentially based on 1990 data, and for a couple of years prior to 2003, everyone was talking about, you know, city needs change over time, the weights that we should be giving different factors probably change over time. And so there had always been the thought that we really needed to update the need formulas for more recent data. There was some thought that the existing formula did not capture all types of needs. And I think that's illustrated by the fact that, yes, we added $40 million to grandfathers for individual cities or individual types of cities because they made the case that the formula did not recognize the needs that they had. The third reason was a desire to eliminate the grandfather. There was still at that time $350 million that was not being distributed via formula out of a $587 million program. $321 of it was based on what cities were getting 10 years earlier. So cities who were very similar now but were very dissimilar in their past were getting radically different amounts of grandfathered aid. And so there was really a feeling that a lot of the inequity that remained in the system was due to that grandfather. And of course, do not let any good crisis go untaken advantage of. We had a state budget crisis of $4 billion in 2003. And when we have a state budget crisis, LGA is one of the programs that is invariably on the chopping block. And if you're going to be taking money away from people, it also tends to be a good time to reform the system. Common wisdom is you can reform a system only if you're putting lots of new money in or you're taking lots of existing money out. It's hard to reform a system on the margin. So, the new 2003 LGA formula, and that is the second column on that 2007 first subject handout. We came up with new need measures for large cities. This was actually a fairly significant analysis, although it was a very quickly done analysis. The whole new program was developed in about 3 months during the middle of the 2003 legislative session. The Department of Revenue developed it, although they asked for significant input from a number of the players and did also ask for some help from legislative staff in working out these formulas. But these were really, truly the governor's formulas. One of the big things was a change in a number of factors have been looked at when we did the analysis for the new city LGA need measure. I believe we looked at, I'm looking at some of the people who were around who worked on this. I want to say there were 33 factors that got considered really heavily, but there were more than that that were considered initially, and then a number of those were eliminated because of correlation and things like that. The analysis was done the same way the analysis had been done in 1992, the results were not nearly as pleasing. For one thing, the explanatory power of the analysis was not nearly as high. There was no time at that point to actually do anything with the small city need measure other than literally to update the coefficients with a regression analysis on the new data. We didn't look at anything were there other factors that better explain variations in small city spending. The explanatory power of the small city formula that was adopted in 2003 was less than 10%. Of the variation. It was not a good measure. But, so, having said that, what else happened? The tax night payments were added to the fiscal capacity measure. There was an argument made that tax night aids are the same as, they're a substitute for property taxes on paid by the mining company, and that they should be included in the measure of fiscal capacity. The original 2003 formula phased in the taconite aids as part of the fiscal capacity measure over a period of 4 years. And finally, the 1993 grandfathers were totally eliminated, and what was left was about $30 million in individual city grandfathers. This was probably the most significant change in the 2003 formula.
Ms. Dalton and members, here's kind of a time frame. I want to adjourn by 3 o'clock today, and I want to leave at least 20 minutes at the end for any discussion or questions or looking ahead into the what we plan to do next. And so, and I'd also like to make sure, Ms. Dalton, that we spend some time on the charts on slides 22 through 24. So, if as we go through this, and I know there's, you know, some other changes we made, but so I want to make sure we get to 22, 23, and 24. There's some charts there that talk about distribution and what different types of cities it's gone to and so forth. And then, so if you could just, Ms. Dalton, gauge that on that so we could.
Okay.
This part at 3:40. See, you still have about 18 minutes. Go ahead.
Two things that were also retained, and I made them sound like they're part of the 2003 aid formula. They actually aren't. The small city aid amount, which was an addition to the formula of $6 per capita, was added in 2006. The regional center aid was actually added in 2001. That was retained as part of the grandfather. There continue to be caps on annual changes to each city. One of the other big factors of the 2003 LGA reform is we removed the automatic appropriation increases.
Mm-hmm.
No one was really happy with the 2003 formula. That was very clear very early on. The complaints about it is that the new formula was too volatile. And by that I meant volatility in two ways. One was because so much of the money was distributed based on the formula, based on factors that we didn't have final numbers for during the session, the session estimates of what individual cities would get was significantly different than the certified amount that individual cities actually got when the certifications were done in September. So people were planning off of what we thought was going to happen during based on the session estimates, and the session estimates were significantly different from the final certification. In addition, the amount of money going to individual cities changed a lot. It didn't take very much of a factor change in an individual city to change their LGA payment enormously, because you now had, you know, $400+ million being distributed via the formula. People did not think that the new large city formula was intuitive. I spent a lot of time explaining what accident rates measures, what is the proxy for in-city needs. I'm not going to do it here. There was a belief that the formula didn't recognize needs of certain types of cities. A lot of people objected to the tax night aid being included because they felt tax night cities had some special needs that were not measured in the LGA formula. Many felt that older suburbs needs were not reflected in the formula. And not surprisingly, people were not happy that there was no funding increases.
Mr.
Chair? Yes, Councilmember Hodge.
Thank you. Ms. Dalton, one question. When you say no annual increases, does that mean sort of an inflation adjustment or?
Ms. Dalton.
Councilman Hodges, what that means is it was a frozen amount. LGA has an open and standing appropriation with a dollar amount attached to it, and that dollar amount was initially frozen. In 2006, there was a $48 million increase that the legislature authorized, but you know, absent the legislature taking action, there was never going to be an increase in the appropriation, like there had been between 92 and 2002. So there were a number of changes made in 2008 to answer some of these criticisms. There were a number of actions taken to decrease volatility. Need is now based on average of 2 years' worth of data. All calculations are based on data available as of January 1. This makes sure that what the legislature is looking at matches almost to the dime what actually happens in September. And there was some additional caps added to make sure that nobody's LGA could go up or down too much. I mean, there have been some caps before, but they were tightened down further. There was also some fairly major changes made to address some of the concerns of small cities and older suburbs. The biggest one was the new city jobs aid. It goes to all cities with a population over 5,000. It's based on your jobs per capita in your city. It is subject to the fiscal capacity offset, and there is a partial offset for regional center aid, but not an entire offset. Regional center aid continues. Small city aid, which had been a kind of a side thing prior to 2008, was rolled into kind of the formula, and it was also subject to the fiscal capacity. So if you are a small city, but you have an enormous tax base, you don't get small city aid anymore. And finally, tax mandate was entirely eliminated as a measure of fiscal capacity. There was also an attempt to increase the funding. As I said, there was an increase of $42 million from 2008 to 2009. There was a scheduled increase of 2% for 2010 and an additional 4% increase scheduled for 2011. There is no automatic increase after that. And I want to point out these increases are prior to any of the allotments. This is just a measure of city LTA from 2000 to 2008 by city type. Minneapolis, St. Paul are center cities. All the rest of the metro areas, the suburbs, large outstate cities, this would be what are on our regular LTA printouts are considered either major cities or regional centers, and then all other outstate cities. As you notice, and these are certified numbers, not the paid numbers. So 2003 is certified, 2008 and 2009 are certified numbers. These are not what are being paid. As you can see, that 2003 certified was kind of the high watermark for LTA payments to all types of cities. And 2008 tends to be kind of a low watermark for most of these cities. One of the things I want to point out is that most of the changes in this have to do with the elimination of the grandfather. Yes. And as you can see, the impact of the aid cuts are different by different types of cities. Having said this, I do want to point out the intergroup differences are bigger than the between group differences. You know, there are some cities in some of these groups that get significantly more money now than they got in 2003. And there's a number of cities who get even less. but generally speaking, Minneapolis and St. Paul have seen a, their 2009 LGA is only 77% of their 2003 watermark. Suburbs as a group are only at 55% of their 2003 high watermark. Large cities, large outside cities, are at 96% of their 2003 high watermark as a group, remember. And other outside cities are at 108% of their 2003 high watermark. These are nominal dollars. These are not constant dollars. This slide actually has a table in your graph, in your packet, and it is a table marked 2009 certified LGA per capita and contributing parts. And this will actually give you this data on an individual city-by-city basis. But what I wanted to point out is that different cities benefit from different parts of the current LGA formula. For instance, Minneapolis and St. Paul, the center cities, get no grandfather day. They get no small city aid at all. Both of them are clearly above 5,000. They get some fairly significant money from the new job space aid that was enacted in 2008, and most of their money is based on the need factor. There is some money going to both to the suburbs based on the small city aid and the job space aid. Now, job space aid is subsidy like $25 per job per capita, and as you know, this is not a whole lot of money to the suburbs. One of the things to keep in mind is if your fiscal need under the old formula was significantly below your fiscal capacity, even adding the job space may not get you above that. There are cities who qualify for job space aid, but their fiscal capacity is so high that they don't get job space aid. As you can see, the what's remaining in the city aid base under the grandfather is primarily going to outstate cities, and the vast majority of it is going to the outstate large cities or outstate regional centers, and it's because of the retention of the regional center aid. And as I said, you can look at how individual cities fare from that on the printer.
Ms. Dalton, you know, some of us serve on the property tax division, and we see runs all the time. But would you just, for the benefit of the members here, go through these runs and how they're organized by cities? Could you just spend a minute doing that, if you would?
Okay.
We've got maybe look at one.
If you just turn to the very first page, after the cover sheet on that certified LGA per capita and contributing parts. The cities are divided first into metro and non-metro. So you'll see all the information on all the metro cities first, and I believe the non-metro cities start on page, I want to say seven? Start on page six. The cities are grouped into similar categories. We've used a grouping like this since 1986 or 87 in the House research to group cities so people can see how similar cities are doing. There's, I believe, seven groups for the metro area and eight groups for the non-metro, and then somebody's looking at me and going, yeah, that sounds about right. These groups have been changed about every 10 years. The last grouping was actually done by the League of Minnesota Cities using the methodology that had been done earlier. And so this is just how we present it. So you can see, you know, there are central cities, there are large cities, older cities, those are really the suburbs, the fully developed suburbs that, you know, the mayor, Crystal, or the person from Crystal was talking about. And, you know, when you go to the non-metro, you will see, you know, we have the major cities, we have regional centers, we have sub-regional centers. A very large group is the cities under 500 in upstate Minnesota. They are a very, they don't account for a lot of LGA, per se, in the big picture, but there are a lot of cities in that group. So it's just a way of looking at cities by types of cities.
Thank you. And you... You have about 7 minutes, Dalton.
Then I may be all set. The next printout that I actually want to point out that some people have said that they want to take a look at is what the distribution of LGA property taxes and tax bases across cities. And so I've done that. You have a run called 2009 Certified LGA Levy and Equalized Tax Capacity. And it will show you those amounts, both on a nominal dollar and on a per capita dollar for every city. And then it has, in the very far column, in 2009 equalized tax rate. Now, for people who actually have an individual city, you're going to go there and you're going to look at your city and say, well, that's not a city tax rate. And it's not. It is not your tax rate divided by your tax capacity. It is your tax levy divided by your adjusted tax, net tax capacity. So this would be after we equalize the sales ratio. So the number will be slightly different than if you are a city manager or a city mayor going, this is what my city levy is. This will be different, slightly different. But it's so they're comparable across cities.
Representative Garofalo, I'm just curious about this. On this album, the, when you're using adjusted net tax capacity, you are still including, you're not using. You are including cabins and you are including farms around outside of 1 acre around a homestead. Is that correct?
Representative Garofalo, these are everything that is subject to tax in that city's jurisdiction.
Okay, so we're not dealing with referendum market value and just that we're talking pure tax capacity.
This is what you would
property that's got a value when we tax it, it's there.
Yes, this would be the city's tax base that it would spread its levy on. It's just that we've adjusted it for sales ratios between different to adjust for different assessment practices.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, here are just some summary statistics for the different groups, the center cities. As you can see, the LGA per capita between center cities, large outstate cities, and other outstate cities is all relatively equal. It's about $230, $240 per capita. The big difference, of course, is the suburbs. Suburbs, on average, get $15 per capita. That's because we have a number of suburbs who get absolutely nothing. You want to figure out why. It's no real surprise. All you have to do is go down to the third row and look at the adjusted net tax capacity per capita. And the adjusted net tax capacity per capita in suburbs is significantly higher than it is in the rest of the state. And then finally, you can take a look at the average equalized tax rate. And what you will see here is, at least within large groups as a whole, there seems to be some equalization that is going on, particularly when you look at center cities, large outstate cities, and other upstate cities. They all are kind of around the 40% range. The suburbs are lower because they have a larger tax base, but, you know, on the other hand, we aren't giving them any aid.
Ms. Dalton, these average equalized tax rates, those are the 2009 unequalized tax rates that are on this chart.
Senator Scully, that is correct.
Thank you.
And as I said, the in-group variations are more significant than the between-group variations. There are some, particularly in some of the smaller cities, we have some small cities who have equalized tax rates that are going to be, you know, in the 70s and 80%. I believe we even have a few that are actually over 100% in the smaller cities.
Well, Ms. Stone, I appreciate you putting those charts together and those runs on this area, because I do think these are the areas when we look at the goals and that type of thing, these are what we're going to look at. You know, is it equalization? Is it property tax relief? What is it that we do? And so I appreciate you putting those together. You know, we're getting right to the end, and the last part deals with unallotment. I don't know if we need to. I think you can look at that. I don't know how the unallotment is going to figure into our funding. So I think we'll just, I'll ask members to look at those last three slides that are here on that. And at this point, I want to give a big thanks to Ms. Dalton and Mr. Hines. We have, in the House and the Senate, for those not familiar, we have wonderful staff that have just a huge, huge amount of knowledge going back to 1971 and maybe even before. But before we even go further, what I'd like, there's a number of staff people here, and I would like to introduce the House staff, and then Senator Scully will do the Senate. And just raise your hand so we can see who you are. But we've already met Ms. Dalton, Mr. Hines, and then we have some House research, Karen Baker. And I don't, Joel is probably up in his office working right now. Is he not here today? All right. Joel Michael will be our staff member. House Fiscal Analysis, Kathy Schill. And then we have House Committee Administrator Sarah Carlson Walrath. And House Legislative Assistant Paul Cummings. And then House DFL Research, Katie Sin. And Laura Sales. And House Republican Research, sitting there, Craig Stone, right straight in the back there. And Department of Revenue, Eric Ouellette. So thank you so much. And I think that's what I have for the House. And Senator,
yes.
If you want to introduce the
Senate counsel would be Ms. Zoff, Joanne Zoff, Jack Paulson, Susan Von Mosch. The Tax Committee Administrator is Chris Rehnquist. My Legislative Assistant is Jason Tiedemann. Senate DFL Research, Chris Rompertle. And Senate GOP Research is Dan Mickelberg. And thank you all for your work.
Thank you very much. All right, at this time, members, it's open for comments. It's open for next steps. I think we're still, we'll be waiting for the VOTS data set database. As that comes through, I think that's going to be very helpful. One of the comments I have in a letter here from the, I think the city of Fridley City managers is looking at a something that might include the incomes of people in that city or that area and put that on the ability to pay. But I think also probably our next meeting, we would need to start looking at what is the goal, what is the purpose or purposes of local government aid. Does everyone agree that's probably the first step we need to decide? Okay.
Well, so,
yes, Sanders.
Mr. I don't disagree. I think that's appropriate, but I think that we probably ought to keep in mind some of those need factors as well, because the purpose tied, I mean, it's tied to that, it seems to me, inextricably tied. So I think we should do as you suggest, but keeping in mind that there is that connection. So.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And absolutely. And I think as we talk equalization and property tax relief, we certainly bring in all those formulas into play. And I think that would be part of that. Senator Scoy, do we need more data? Like I said, we're looking for the FOSS database. No, I know. This is great. This is great to have this. I'm just wondering, members, is there some more data or historical stuff you'd like to see? Representative Garofalo.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and it's certainly not a large piece of information we need, but I just think it's important for committee members to be reminded of what the fiscal 12, fiscal 13 budget cycles look like, the federal government's involvement in reimbursing or not reimbursing us for services, and in terms of figuring out as part of the need the total amount of money that's actually going to be spent in this program. It's important for committee members to remember that regardless of who wins the elections and how things move forward, that 12 and 13 will be smaller dollar amounts than 10 and 11 are. And so to the degree that that shapes our context and people are just reminded of the state general fund budget situation, I think that would be just an appropriate item to be part of the package of information we have.
Thank you, Representative. And I think in looking at a broader picture, just as Mr. Young had mentioned too, not only looking at what we might be looking at as far as budgets and in the future, and just kind of fiscal restraints and realities, but also looking maybe at all aids to that cities receive, you know, transportation or other areas. So I think as we go into this discussion, I think it's important that we look just beyond that portion, as both Representative Garofalo and Mr. Young have mentioned.
Mr. Chairman. I'm not looking for any additional information at this point, but if you could have this emailed to us, it'd be helpful. Some of these charts and color would be a little bit easier to analyze and contemplate.
Ms. Dalton, can we get an email in color?
Mr. Chair, I believe what we could do is that we could post both the PowerPoint presentation and all of the printouts on our website, and then you could access them through our website.
And which website would that be?
It would be the House Research website, and I will send out an email where they will all be located. Or we could put it on the House Tax.
Well, I'm wondering, can the LGA Task Force have its own website, or is there something we have to do with that? And look, is that possible?
As long as you limit some of the input from the all that citizen input that you're continuing to bring in.
I understand. But we could maybe have a separate under either. I don't know where it would be, but I understand. But
Representative Martin, yes, I understand that the committee administrator has a listserv that we could probably email everything out.
Okay. We will get something to work so that we kind of have everything together, and we will certainly get that out. Other members' concerns or ideas in looking at, we're not talking formulas tonight, that's ultimately going to be something we're going to look at later, but first, we're going to look at the goals and purpose, for sure. Make sure we look at it in a broader range of scope. Council Member Hodges, it looks like you have a thought.
You're a very good mind reader, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. It's telling to me that it is far easier to present and analyze the money streams from the state to cities than it is to analyze the money streams from cities to the state. The fact that it's easy to say how many dollars cities are getting from the state, but it's very difficult to say how many dollars the cities are sending to the state is telling to me. And I think that feeds into the notion, what I believe is an incorrect notion, that local government aid is some kind of welfare for cities. My interpretation of the history as I know it, I didn't hear anything different today, is that it's a revenue sharing program where the dollars around the state are pooled together and redistributed so that all communities can do well. And in a situation like that, I don't think we can consider those dollars welfare, but rather a sharing of purpose and cities and the state coming together for a common purpose so that everybody in the state and every community in the state can do well, which I think is a belief that we all share. I think some of the policies that were initially put into place to meet that goal have been eroded or broken over time, just to lay it out on the table. I think the quantitative changes in local government aid have led to some qualitative changes in the policies that support the vision of every community doing well. And so I want to lay that out on the table because it's a perspective. It's going to be one of the questions I have and one of the things that I raise as we talk about what is the purpose of local government aid. It's hard to make the case that cities are a partner here and that we give a lot to make sure that everybody does well if we can't enumerate what cities give. And I think that's just telling, and I think that has just that lack of data or information in and of itself has fed into an inaccurate notion of local government aid as being welfare as opposed to a policy choice that the entire state made to make sure that everybody can do well. So to the extent that we can get information about dollars that cities send to the state, I think it's going to help us have the biggest picture possible of the relationship between the state and the city and cities, what our fiscal relationship is and why our fiscal relationship is. And again, to make sure that everybody in the state does well.
And Councilmember Hodges, when you talk about dollars of fees to the state, what are you referring to there? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, the sales tax and the income tax dollars in particular.
Okay.
In part because when these policies were put into place, those were the specific those things were specifically forbidden for cities to do. Let me put it that way. As part of this overall policy decision-making process. And I don't think that's coincidental. I think that those dollars were meant to be pooled and to some degree redistributed around the state. I think that was part of the initial intention there. But to that extent, then to the extent that cities agreed to that or to the extent that the state, you know, created cities in that way, because cities are creatures of the state. To that extent, I think it's important to enumerate what does that mean for cities that we don't have an option to do a local option sales tax or a local option income tax. That is something that cities forego as a result, and there is a lot of state capacity generated by dollars that flow from cities to the state, and I think it's useful to enumerate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's a very interesting discussion that we're starting here, and part of it is the common purpose of all the residents of the state, and part of what I said in my introduction dealt with the vitality of the state and doing for the betterment of the state. But part of the thing that we're just talking about is that cities are making contributions to the state, which isn't actually the case. It's the individual residents of that community making the contributions. And that's also why the title of the study of AIDS is, you know, AIDS to local governments, because we have residents that live in town. They don't receive any LGA. They just don't. They live in a township. but they pay sales and income tax. And we have, you know, areas that are primary services are maybe more county-based than city-based. And so these are all going to be interesting things. I also like what Senator Scheid said, is that we look at these regions of the state, we have to take into consideration the needs, and not just the needs that are currently spelled out in the factors, but other overburdens like Minneapolis and St. Paul would have. And so I think we're starting on an interesting discussion, but we also want to think about, you know, how this relates to all the individual Minnesotans and the different places that they live, and are we going to try to equalize for all of these different Minnesotans or not? And, you know, is that the role of AIDS, or is that going to be some other thing, or aren't we going to do it at all?
Senator Stenjump, thank you for being here, and we all gave a brief little introduction. If you would care to introduce yourself and your little background on LGA or...
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Stenjump. I serve in the State Senate. I am from Rochester. I served on the Rochester City Council for 11 years prior to coming to the state legislature, and obviously through that experience, we were always highly involved in looking at LGA and the value of that component to our overall city budget. So that's my background in terms of interest and maybe to some degree knowledge in this, how LGA works relative to assisting not only certainly my city, but in the broader sense, cities across Minnesota. And I just happened to be sitting here about 3 minutes ago thinking about the little town of Nashua or those kind of towns out there that maybe Senator Skoy is referring to. Now, we've got some tax base where I'm coming from, and we get LGA. But there are so many, and one only needs to go on a bonding tour to understand just what this state is all about and where there really are needs. I suspect, as Senator Scheid has pointed out, the main streets and the neighborhoods of many of these small towns across Minnesota just don't have the ability to sustain some of these essential services. So I think as we talk through this, we'll come to recognize that if we don't already, and hopefully, in my view, be sympathetic to those needs, especially as we think about, if you will, redistributing the wealth of the state of Minnesota, you know, throughout it for the common good of all the people.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments? Well, here's the plan. Senator Skoy and I were talking a little bit before the meeting. I think we're looking at meeting again in January.
I think it would be not well served to try to cram this in between Christmas and New Year's Eve. So maybe we'll look at a meeting in January sometime. Certainly open to, you know, input from, you know, members. If you have conflicts, I'd appreciate you letting my office know, and we'd try to schedule around whatever we can. But maybe the week before our session, or the second week before our session, the third week of January, something along that line, and get together again. And then I would, you know, Paul and I were talking just a little bit. We'd probably anticipate a meeting and during the session time, maybe, if we will make some progress, hopefully, in this.
Yes, thank you. And your assignment for January will be to start thinking about the goals and purposes of local government aid. And also, if you think, you know what, we need another piece of information and there's something more, contact us and we can also have that prepared and look at that at the next meeting. But I think the next meeting, if we would be able to determine a goal and a purpose for local government aid, we would be moving a huge step forward and set up the foundations for the formula that we would look at later. Senator Scheid.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I wonder, are you planning to hear from the cities, the towns, and counties probably sooner rather than later in the process to hear? Because there's been an awful lot of work done. I don't have to tell you at that level.
Senator Scheid, yes, absolutely.
Well, and actually, Senator Schatz, I think that's a very good point. It may be in the meeting in January we will start that meeting, you know, with the hearing from the cities and local jurisdictions that are, you know, the stakeholders and affected by this.
And we'll hear from them what they think the goals and purposes should be. Senator, send them.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being obviously way late, but and maybe it came up during discussion, but if it didn't, I would be, from a historic perspective, interested in a little bit of information on the local government trust fund. It was something we talked about a lot in, as I became a city council member in the early 90s. What happened to it? Why does no one ever talk about the local government trust fund anymore? And if failure was the case, why did it fail?
Senator Senjum, it was mentioned by Ms. Dalton, but we didn't really get into great detail about it. And let's do that. Let's talk about that, because I have to admit that this year when we had the county options sales tax, as I approached the county groups, their number one concern is they kept bringing up the fact that this local government trust fund had been set up and then yanked away, and they had that fear still, you know, 15 years later. So it certainly is a big issue to local units of government who kind of had this set up. And then, so Ms. Dalton, with that, I think that's pertinent to our discussion, is kind of what happened to that. Not for today.
What I heard Ms. Dalton say is that the legislature didn't do a very good job of figuring out what was going to be the distribution from this in 93. And then in 94, they just abandoned it. Did I hear that correctly? That was
Mr. Hines. Senator, I think she said something like that, and that she was getting a little casual maybe in her reference. But what happened was the legislature tried
to
anticipate what 2 cents was going to raise, and it was tried to fit as many of the existing intergovernmental aid programs as it could into that 2% so that there wouldn't really be much of an impact on the state budget, that they would... a bunch of programs would shift into that fund that about matched how much would be in there. And that was the idea behind getting the counties to adopt it. Then what happened was, of course, as we all know, we never can predict that closely what the revenues are going to be. And because of the way the timing of these things work, the final estimate of how much would be in that trust fund came out like with a November forecast, and the only time that that money could be collected or dispersed, if it was over or under, within the fiscal year, within the biennium, or the fiscal year, I can't remember exactly if we balanced it by year or by biennium, had to come out of a December payment. So we basically, I think it ran for 2 years, and the 1 year there was more money in the November forecast than the forecast, and so all of a sudden there was extra money to spend out that was kind of free, seen as free money to the things that hadn't been certified that they were going to get it. It was just extra. And the other year it was short, and we had to cut them at the very end. And I think basically the legislature wasn't comfortable with that mechanism of this kind of free money going out, or if it went one way, or just cut in the short run. So it was more of the timing issue, and in my mind the legislature didn't really completely want it to be function as a purely separate funding source for local government programs. They were still sort of tied into keeping the programs pretty much the way they had worked. And if it had gone on longer, who knows how there might have been. But it didn't seem like it was really perceived as a completely separate source of revenue that the legislature would just think of it as being a local government revenue. So,
to kind of add to what Mr. Hines said, I mean, it really is a timing issue. We were making payments, either making cuts or making additional payments in December, in a budget year that ended December. So we were making extra payments or cutting payments December 28th for a budget that ended December 31st. And the property taxes had already been certified for the following year. So it wasn't like when we made those payments in 2000, you know, made those final adjustments in December of 1992, that that could either that the cities could lower their taxes in 93 because they got this windfall. So there was just no way of doing it. And I think that's part of what made people very uncomfortable, because it was really, to a large extent, seen as in 92 cities are windfall. Whether, you know, I could argue that they didn't, but, you know.
Would it be realistic to have that on a 13-month deal instead of just a one-month December? Do you get my question?
Senator Skoy, I think we're going to wait until January. You know, like every good show, remember Lost in Space with Billy Mummy and that? It would always wind up and you had to wait till the next week. That's what we're going to do. But we do have one more comment from Mr. Young.
Thank you. Yeah, the concept of the local government trust fund seemed quite good, in the sense that those 2 cents would be put in that trust fund, the part from the general fund, and local government aid would rise and fall with the economy and not be a burden to the general fund and not be as political as it has been. But it did go away rather quickly. I'd like to look at that a little bit more. In reference to our homework, though, goals and purpose for the future, it might help. Is there a goal and purpose statement today that we could use to not necessarily work from, but to understand where we're at today? And
Mr. Young, other than what was in the slide when it was talked about 1971, it was used as an equalization program and a property tax relief. Right? It looked like there was 2 points there. Ms. Dalton?
Representative Markford, I believe that if you had to characterize the debates that have gone on in the last 10 years, the focus has been more and more on equalization. Equalization of need and equalization of fiscal capacity. One of the things that kind of relates to some things that Senator Skelly and Senator Sengren have talked about is one half of the population in this state lives in locations that get no LTA. 900,000 of them are in townships, and the rest of them are in suburbs or very wealthy, often lakeside communities in outside Minnesota, and they get no aid at all. So I would say that there's clearly been a movement away from the general revenue sharing purpose that was part of the initial LGA to much more of an equalization purpose.
Members?
Just one comment.
You bet, Mayor. Go ahead.
One of the things we're living in Colquay, and we're similar to maybe in Rochester and a lot of other places, you call them regional centers. And although they may not get local government aid, we provide EMS service, fire service. We provide the libraries, the senior centers, and we can go on and on and on, that they don't pay for. And Colquay, 50% of the people that use our library are not from the city of Colquay, yet we pay for the entire library system there. So that's a subject that I'm sure we'll all bring up as we go through, because there's different needs for different cities. And I do agree that we have to equalize, but the needs are so much different, and the surrounding areas of the people, the things that we give them and receive no reimbursement for is unfair in many ways. So, thank you.
Members, thank you so much for serving and for your attendance here today. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.